This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, I'm Matt Chorley, and this is Politics Without the Boring Bits. Coming up on today's episode, I've been to the pub with Wetherspoons boss Sir Tim Martin. We talk Brexit, Boris, and why are the carpets so sticky? Before that, we'll bring you a sneak preview of this week's How to Win an Election. Peter Manderson, Daniel Finkelstein and Polly McKenzie, amongst other things, talking about how to write a manifesto, because that's what everyone is doing right now. And Steve Bray, the Stop Brexit man who's been plaguing Westminster with his speakers and his EU flag hat for years, has finally had his disco equipment confiscated. James Hill will tell us why. And if you like what you hear on the podcast, don't forget you can join me for Politics Without the Boring Bits on Times Radio. Just listen for free on your DAB radio, on your smart speaker, or download the Times Radio app. That's Politics Without the Boring Bits, weekdays from 10. Right, first, as we always do on a Tuesday, here's a little sneak peek of what we were talking about this week on How to Win an Election.
Hello, How to Win team. I was just wondering what the process was of putting together a manifesto in your political parties. Who writes it and who approves it? Loving the podcast, Charlie.
That's Charlie there. So, manifestos, who writes them, who approves them? When does this process begin? Is it happening already? Danny?
Well, I've been involved in a few, and it varies a little bit. In the end, the party leader will obviously have to be satisfied with their manifesto. There are lots of bits of it, though, you know, in each subject area, and there are often, so for example, in the Conservative Party in 1992, there was a massive row over changes made at the printer by the director of the research department, my predecessor, Andrew Lansley, in a section about transport. One of the things that's important to understand about politicians is they try to do what they say they are going to do. This is exactly the opposite of conventional wisdom. And therefore, it's very important what they say they're going to do, because they bind themselves into position, which they then try and implement. You know, which is the reason why, when we talked earlier about Peter intervening on this question of 0 hours contracts and trying to get the wording right at this point, he's trying to save them, I think, Peter, from pushing themselves in a position which they can't implement later, and then they'll get into a very awkward...
Or can't defend in an election campaign.
A manifesto is basically three different documents in one. The first is that it is a pitch to the voters to try and win their support. And for that, it needs a sort of an amount of narrative integrity that fits with your campaign narrative, and some sort of banner policies, that the top things that symbolise that story you're trying to tell. It's also a way of holding together a coalition of supporters within your party, at the level of your shadow cabinet, your cabinet, but also within, you know, all of the different stakeholders, the, you know, the Conservative Friends of Science or the Labour Friends of, you know, farming or whatever it might be. All these people who have pitches and ideas, and they want to feel heard, and you can't get everybody's demands into the manifesto, But you can give people a sense of belonging and identity and connection to your agenda that helps you to mobilise a campaigning force. But then it's also, Stanley's mentioned, a programme for government. If you are assuming you will lose the election, then it's not very much a programme for government, and that matters a bit less for most of the Liberal Democrat manifestos that have existed. It's not really a programme for government. It's just the other two things, which is why Liberal Democrat manifestos tend to be really, really long, including so many thousands of policies.
The first election manifesto I ever had to wrestle with and have responsibility for presenting was in 1987. It was our first point of recovery from 1983.
The longest suicide note in history.
Indeed.
Michael Foot's
just crammed full of Michael Foot, Tony Benn, vote-losing policies. So I took a different approach to these policy statements and documents by the time I arrived at Labour Party headquarters. I had no alternative but to take all the sort of policy output of the policy department, and they were the defenders of the Labour Party Holy Grail. But I said, well, as the director of communications, though, I had responsibility for how they were presented on the page. And I would put the policy print, all the stuff, to one edge of the page, create a large white margin on the other side, and in the white margin, I put, extracted from the policy in the way that I chose, because I was the director of communications, single sentences, which were my summary of what I thought the Labour Party was saying, or rather should say. And it was the best gloss I could possibly put in that large white margin with as much of the print sort of squeezed on the other end of the page. The truth is that Polly is right. Manifestos are both campaigning documents and governing documents. In my sort of Blair Brown experience, Brown tended to see manifestos as campaigning documents, and their point was to put in dividing lines between you and your opponents, and his favourite dividing line, which actually did very well for him until 2010, was investment versus cuts, our investment versus Tory cuts. Problem is, in 2010, we'd sort of run out of money after the global financial crisis, so it made the investment hard, and the Tories were actually making a virtue of cuts, Cameron and Osborne. And it, at one level, it probably worked well for them. They were more in tune with what voters were feeling. On the other hand, some would say that it contributed to their achieving only a hung parliament rather than a majority. I'm not sure about that.
And you can hear the full episode of How to Win an Election with Peter Manderson, Daniel Finkstein and Polly McKenzie. Just search for How to Win an Election wherever you're listening to this.
No, 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 no.
The Tory Party. Where do we start? Boris Johnson. Liar, cheat, charlatan.
Well, if you've ever tried to watch anyone broadcasting live from Westminster, you've been to a political event, party conference, you just happen to have been around Westminster at some point, you'll probably be familiar with the sound of Steve Bray.
Stop Brexit!
Yeah, that's he's the Stop Brexit man, best known for hanging around Parliament, interrupting news broadcasts and shouting stop.
Yeah.
All right, Steve. Well, a while ago, when he was in trouble because he was making too much noise, I asked him what he was doing.
We have a government which I believe is out of control. I think it's a UKIP-Tory mix, which is going too far to the right, and we're heading for a fascist government.
That's a bit excessive, isn't it? Heading for a fascist government?
Not really. It all starts somewhere, and it starts with taking away your rights. First, they laugh at you. Then they ridicule you, and then they shun you, and then they take away your rights.
And then they take away your loudspeaker. The Spectator's political correspondent, James Hill, got the story. James, what's happened to Steve?
He's been silenced, according to him at least. Basically, his big amplifiers have been taken away after years of causing misery to everyone who lives and works around in Westminster. And really, it's, I think, after a lot of pressure was put on the Met Police to kind of say, hang on a sec, you know, this man's allowed to protest here, use his vocal cords, but does he have to use this loud sound speaker, particularly every Wednesday when he blares it out for 3 hours before PMQs and after?
And just explain to people who haven't been around Westminster just how loud, and let's be honest, annoying Steve has been since essentially the vote for Brexit in 2016?
Well, I think this is the thing, is that originally he was just a man with a couple of placards in 2018 he started. But since then, he's gone really, really developed. He's bought this sound system and he sits there outside Parliament all day, stands there shouting, getting in lots of different disputes with different MPs, Jonathan Gullis and Lee Anderson being a couple of the most prominent. But he then obviously on Wednesdays likes to get his sound speaker out in particular and blast really, really loud music, which you can hear inside the Palace of Westminster from about 100 metres away. And so there's thousands of civil servants and MPs being disrupted by it. And I think I've already had a couple of ministers message me and say, well, fantastic, that's the best news you've had from the Met Police in years.
I mean, we should point out, you know, obviously, you know, the right to protest is important. He has been protesting now for the best part of almost 8 years. And... The eagle-eyed will have spotted he has not stopped Brexit.
No, I mean, I think you've got the Hirun Nuda of one of those Japanese soldiers holding out after World War II for 30 years. I mean, Brexit has come and gone. We are out of the European Union. And the question is, I think, by the time maybe a rejoin movement comes out in 20 years, will he still be there? And I think there's an interesting question as well around protest here, which is that you have lots of crowdfunds online. And every time anything happens with Steve Bray, he gets to use it as an excuse to buy more of this. So previously, his... loudspeakers have been taken away. And then, of course, that raised thousands of pounds online. So these people are effectively lifelong professional protesters rather than sort of a person who comes for a day or so. And it's caused a lot of irritation to MPs of all party colours over the last years or so.
Yeah, like we saw yesterday with the farmers and the tractors and that sort of.
So exactly.
What is the mood like in Westminster, James? Is the last day of term before they break up for recess? Rishi Sunak's chairing cabinet right now. He's in the front of the liaison committee later. What is the mood, particularly amongst Conservative MPs?
Peaceful. Much quieter now that Steve Bray's microphone's been taken away. I think it really is an end of term feel to it. And I think a sense of drift, if anything, people are waiting for the election. But what's so striking is really how both main political leaders, Keir Starmer and Rishi Sunak, really aren't making the political weather in a way. And it's very, very quiet. You wouldn't have believed that the local election campaigns launched last week. And I think it's a sense of exhaustion over the past 9 months that nothing's really changed the polls. So I think people are looking forward to their Easter recess and thereafter maybe letting battle commence in April, May, and with potential idea of a June election before the summer.
You still think there could be a June election?
I don't, but I think it'll be October. But these are the whispers that done the rounds, which is the whole 2017 thing,
Oh, yeah, because that went very well. Went very well. James Hill there from The Spectator on Steve Bray losing his disco. Up next, I'm off to the pub with Wetherspoons boss Sir Tim Martin.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The Big Thing. It's Matt Cholley on Times Radio in the Cross Keys pub in the City of London. It's a Wetherspoons pub. And I'm here with Sir Tim Martin, the man who founded the chain back in 1979.
Long time ago, man.
I've come to the pub at lunchtime, Tim, and we're drinking coffee.
I know.
Is the lunchtime pint dead?
No, but when you get to my age, you've got to slow down a bit. I'm very disappointed. I'm very disappointed. So how do you think... there are a lot of people in here. I mean, are as many people... Is the lunchtime pint still a thing?
It's probably... I watched an excerpt from Smiley's People with Alec Guinness in 1982, and they were having a meeting in MI5 or whatever it was, and they were drinking whiskey and smoking cigarettes. I think it's less of it. It's changed imperceptibly over the years, but a lot of people still do have a pint at lunchtime, but it's not so much part of the culture, especially among people like journalists who are the most notorious boozers.
So let's talk about then. Wetherspoons is doing very well. You know, the rest of the high street seems to be being hollowed out with shops and things going. Pre-tax profits up eightfold. But overall, we hear about pubs going under all the time, particularly since the pandemic, 29 closing every week. What are you doing differently? You've had to shut some pubs as well, but how are you managing to buck that trend?
It's very difficult to say, and I think I've always described it as 1,000 components of a BMW. It's no one thing. But obviously, our prices are lower, which must mean we're efficient operators. Our pubs are maybe a bit bigger, and we've got far longer staying pub managers and kitchen managers. So like to think we got better employment policies.
And is the clientele, the sort of people who go to the pub, changing? We hear a lot about, you know, particularly people work from home. Is it an older crowd now, a Gen Z coming in for their non-alcoholic spritzers? Are you getting the next generation into the pub, or are they staying at home looking at their phones?
I think Wetherspoon pubs have always attracted a broad church. And so I think we're attracting everyone. It's very difficult to tell if there's less of some and more than others. After the pandemic ended, it took older people much longer to come back out. Young people were more in evidence then. But I would say everyone's out now, more or less. Perhaps minding their money more and coming less frequently than they would.
And what about opening hours? Because there's been a lot of talk in recent weeks, people particularly in London, but I think this is true in lots of towns and cities. The nightlife seems to be dying out. London, a 24-hour city, you struggle to get a drink after 10 o'clock. Are you looking at your hours?
No, we're staying open the hours we always have. It's very difficult to understand what's happened, because immediately after the lockdowns ended, young people were out a lot, but people running nightclubs or late bars have said now it's got very, very tough. And I can't understand why, because young people like to dance, get out there, meet their partners, etc.
One of the problems we've heard a lot about is hospitality businesses, pubs, restaurants, clubs, struggling to find people to work in them. You know, high labour costs, labour shortages. Is that something that's affected you?
We've been less affected than most, so we've been fully staffed the whole time. It was very difficult to recruit people immediately after the lockdown. I don't think they were scared of going out. I think we're much more creatures of habit than we realise. If we stay in our house for a couple of years, if you then open the door and say, right, venture out, we get a bit frightened. Or just takes us a long time to change. But I think it has to be remembered that we've got the lowest ever unemployment in the UK's history, certainly in my lifetime, which doesn't fit with the general narrative about the economic climate at the moment. It's very odd, and I don't think anyone really understands it.
One of the things I remember, you backed Brexit, and we'll come on to the broader question of Brexit later, but about a year after the referendum, you were up in front of a House of Lords committee, and you were concerned about finding the staff to work. There were labour shortages then, and you got quite a lot of criticism back then for you're the one who wanted to bring up the drawbridge, and now you're complaining there aren't Europeans to come and work in your pubs. How's that panned out since then?
That's not quite right, Matt. What I said is that we're fully staffed in our pubs, and there's nothing whatsoever to prevent the country from doing the same as the Australians do with the Kiwis, or we do with the Irish, and saying that we provide visas for Eastern Europeans or Europeans generally. Nothing whatsoever to stop us doing that as a country ruling itself. You don't need the EU to do it. And I said, I think that would have been a reasonable thing for us to do based on proximity, the Australian and the Irish example. I said, you couldn't do it so easily with India or China from a pragmatic point of view, because they've got 1.x billion people in each country, and it just isn't feasible.
But I suppose lots of people voted for Brexit because they wanted to reduce the number of people coming here, not make it easier for people to come here. And actually what we've seen since Brexit is the numbers have gone to the roof, both legal and illegal.
Yeah, well, that's right, which is another issue, really, as to what I've always thought we need. As I said to the House of Lords Committee, successful economies need a gradually increasing population. But not everyone agrees with that proposition, of course. So it's a complex area. It's a very complex. We rely for our freedom, really, for the last 100 years, on North America. And its population has gone from 100 million in 1900 to a third of a billion today. And it's only because it's got such a big population and its GDP per capita has risen astronomically as well, that it's able to, in the Cold War, in the First World War, Second World War, to stand shoulder to shoulder with us. Without that, we have made it be subject to authoritarian regimes. So we rely on a country which has had high levels of immigration. It's a complex area.
How many staff have you got, and how many of those are from outside the UK?
We've got 42,000 staff. We haven't got a survey to say how many. We did a mini survey a while ago, and it was relatively low percentage overall in the company, under 10%. If you took this pub in the City of London, it would be much higher.
But it's different in different parts of the country.
Yeah.
In terms of your position in politics, you know, you're running pubs, you've got a big constituency of people who come in here all the time. There's the glossy magazines on there which have got your views on politics. You're quite a powerful man in politics, aren't you?
Well, funnily enough, until I was 62, I almost never commented on politics at all. So I think I'm a sort of single issue guy, really. And my main theory in life is that democracy is essential for the future of the world. And so when it came to Brexit, there's a definite democratic deficit in the EU. You don't vote for the president. So I felt it was better to revert to the previous democratic system. So, but apart from that, I never said when Tony Blair was in power, I think we'd be better off with whoever it was in opposition at the time.
So how do you feel then, since we took back control, how do you feel like the people we've democratically elected have got on running the country?
it could hardly have been more chaotic in many respects, but I think it's the I think democracy's always chaotic. Look at America, and people are crowding at the borders to try and get in from authoritarian countries to North America, in spite of what we perceive as Biden against Trump. How could that possibly have happened? But it's a high class problem because it's democracy, so it's chaotic. I think it was particularly chaotic at certain episodes in the last few years. But I think that's democracy, and we get too down on it. As I said, lowest ever unemployment at the moment. Something's going right.
Do you see, when you see politicians, you know, going to pubs, Boris Johnson used to go to pub, Nigel Farage has never had a pint glass in his hand. Do you think that's convincing?
Nigel's a genuine boozer. I'm not sure about Boris. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I wish he'd seen that teetotal, but he still feels the need to go to a pub and
pull
a pint.
He does, actually. Yeah, right.
What do you make of that?
Well, I think, politics is a job, isn't it? And I suppose what they have to do is get votes, and pubs are part of the constituency. So I can understand that. It's if you want to get elected Prime Minister, Matt, you've got to get in the old boozer.
So you said Nigel Farage is a proper boozer. He called you a Brexit legend. He must have asked you to stand for one of his parties. Is he trying to get you into politics?
Not him personally, but I'm sure I could. Running the business, I think they know it's impossible. You know, I'm full-time working in the company. It's been a tough few years, and paraphrasing Muhammad Ali, if I even dream of becoming a politician, I better wake up and apologise.
But they must all want you. They must be courting your vote the whole time.
Not much, really. I think they know that prior to the referendum, I wasn't involved. It was quite funny because today our results came out and it was March 2016. I went to see Ian King on Sky News, I've just seen today, and he said, how are you going to vote? I said, well, I'm going to leave. Vote leave. And that's the first time I'd ever said it. So I hadn't been a UKIPper any of that sort of stuff.
Last year you said you were considering voting Labour. What are you thinking today?
Did I say that? Yeah, I mean, I'm an agnostic now. I'm not going to... I'm going to keep shtum on political parties. That's my approach to life. I'm getting on a bit. I'm running a pub company and it's been a turbulent few years.
Does that mean there'll be less of the sort of overtly political stuff in the magazines?
I think I can take an issue and say... as I've done, say, people shouldn't be cancelled. There was an article in the Times by Matthew Syed, which I printed in the magazine, and he was saying how people are being tried by social media and how frightening it is. And I think that's a really big issue for us. But it's not party political, I don't think. But it's a big issue.
Do you worry about being cancelled?
No. Because I'm so groovy... why is everyone laughing? It's impossible to cancel me. No, I mean, I wouldn't like to be cancelled, I suppose, but I think I'm quite lucky in a way, because we've got a pub company, in a sense we've got a voice. If we had a widget factory, I don't think you have, but if you run pubs and you've got a view, you can say it. I mean, they say no politics in pubs, but people are always debating issues.
So you I introduced you at the beginning, Sir Tim Martin. You got a knighthood. There was a bit of sniffiness about that. Why?
People thought it brought the honour system into disrepute, which I can understand.
But you are a successful businessman.
Yeah.
You employ thousands of people. People come into your pubs the whole time. Is it a snobbish thing? Because you back Brexit and because you serve cheap drinks to people who want a cheap drink, is it a snobbish thing?
It's not for everyone, and I can sort of understand people saying, you know, if they're a Remainer, for example, that adopting that type of attitude. I mean, Brexit is very divisive, but is it snobbish? A bit, sometimes, but not always. We actually, weirdly enough, we got some stats the other day. People who drink in our pubs are above average for the areas in which we trade and on the high street. I don't understand that, but there you are. Maybe that's why they're better off.
If you stepped back a bit from politics, did you find Remainers refusing to come into your pubs? Did it affect you at all?
Not perceptibly. So in the years running up to the pandemic, our sales increased every year. There were three and a half years, I think, after the referendum. So people, I think the referendum, until we actually left anyway, the referendum was put out there as something, a constitutional issue that we were required to debate. And so people subconsciously or consciously accepted that. But when we actually left, I think people got a bit angry. They didn't think it was for real, you know, until we actually did.
Given
leave.
All of the anger, abuse, you know, whether it's on social media or in the papers or whatever that you got, do you regret dipping your toe into politics?
No, I think that for humanity to survive, we need democracy everywhere in the world, and so I think it was reasonable to articulate the arguments in the way not only I did, but everyone else did. I think I got into trouble because there were plenty of people who supported Remain who were running big businesses, and that was the mainstream, but I was sort of on the outside, really.
Did you think, because you know, the government's own figures show the economy is now smaller as a result of Brexit, lots of the things that people warned about came true. Given where we are, and it's hard, I know, because you've got the pandemic in the middle of it, But what is it, 8 years on now, do you think it was worth it? If all that energy had been put, you know, government energy, business energy, it had just been put into the economy?
I think if you're a Remainer, you're never going to believe that the economy now is doing as well as it would have done if we'd stayed in. Well, I think it's true. A famous Remainer said only last week that since the referendum, we've outgrown the three largest European economies. It was the Chancellor of the Exchequer. I assume that he got his figures from the Treasury. So we've chugged along okay, and I don't think there's much difference. The former head of the Bank of England, Mervyn King, said during the referendum he thought people for and against Brexit exaggerated their cases and it didn't make as much difference as had been said. There's a guy called Robert Toombs, a professor at Cambridge University, who said that the UK has marched in lockstep with the United States of America's economy since 1945, and you know, in or out of the EU. So I think things get a bit exaggerated.
And figures can be used to say anything. You backed Boris because of Brexit. Would you like to see him come back?
I think I'd say to Boris, as a politician, you're an extremely good journalist. I don't think Boris is the sort of guy that can sit round a table and debate issues and come out with sensible solutions with a team behind him, having sat there for a few hours. And essentially, if you're a politician or running a business, that's what you've got to do. Nothing against Boris, amusing character, but I don't think that's his forte.
Do you think you could do a better job as PM?
Yes.
And what about the current crop? You've got Rishi Sunak, Keir Starmer, Ed Davey, Humza Yousaf. Which one would you like to go to the pub with?
I wouldn't mind going to the pub with any of them. It'd have to be a coffee with Rishi, you tell me.
but he's
an engaging guy. Keir Starmer, I'm sure I'm happy to have a pint with him. Ed Davey, I don't know so much, but I'm sure he's a reasonable enough man.
What's your drink of choice?
Abbott Ale.
And followed
by a glass or two of Merlot.
Very good.
Which I'll be going to have in a while.
Well, I know I'm just on the coffee here. I wanted to ask you about the move that the more and more alcohol-free drinks and that sort of shift that seems to happen, particularly generationally. Have you seen that reflected in what you're selling?
Over the years, yes. I mean, when we floated on the stock market 30 years ago, 5% of our sales were food. Now it's about 38%. And with that comes quite a lot of non-alcoholic drinks. But the number one draft product, sacrilegiously, in our pubs is cola. I won't mention the brand name. That's the draft product. And we sell more coffee and tea than we do cola. So it's really very... People concentrate on the non-alcoholic beers, but they're a very tiny percentage.
Could you ever imagine a Wetherspoons that was all non-alcohol?
No. That, you crossed the Rubicon at that point.
Have you been following this thing about the Crooked House? You've taken over. We're sitting in a lovely old building here.
Yeah.
Loads of, you know, in lots of towns and cities across the country, old buildings have been brought back into use by Wetherspoons. This Crooked House pub was knocked down. Would you ever think about taking that over?
When I see something like that, I'm quite tempted. I saw a railway station somewhere which was disused. It might have been the oldest railway station in the UK, and I was tempted to go to this small village, but I think the non-executive directors would say, let's keep it commercial, Tim. But yeah, we all love restoration of an old building if we possibly can do it.
One question I do have to ask you, and actually this doesn't apply here, but often you're in lovely old buildings that you've done up lovingly, and yet the carpets are quite sticky, Tim. Why are the carpets sometimes a bit sticky in a Wetherspoons?
Yeah, I've not noticed that, but
if you're visiting, they probably whip the Hoover out first.
Maybe it's Billy Connolly said the Queen thought everywhere smelt of fresh paint.
Yeah.
So maybe guys go around with Hoovers before I turn up in the pub. If the carpets are sticky, they shouldn't be, and we need to sort it. And
I'll let you know the next time.
Next time you let me know.
Now, do you know about the Wetherspoons game on Facebook?
I've heard of it, yes.
Have you ever played it?
No.
Should we play it now?
No, I can't do it.
I'll do it. I'll do it on here, look. So what you do is we go up, there's this Facebook group. It's called the Wetherspoons game, and we go on there, and people who are in a Wetherspoons right now say where they are, and then what table they're on.
Right.
And then you can buy them a drink.
Okay.
So where were these two? They're in Newcastle, Quayside, look, table 62.
Look at those two ruffians.
Shall we see if they want one?
Yeah, go on then.
Right, so hang on, they're on Quayside, Newcastle,
they
table 62.
They don't need a drink, those two guys. They've got a bloody drink there already.
Well, here, look, so it's table 62 in the Quayside. So then I go on the Wetherspoons app. There we are. What should we send them?
I think we should send them they got a couple of pints. I think we should send them a coffee.
A coffee?
Yeah.
They don't look like lads who want a coffee. They don't. I think we should send them a couple of lagers.
Okay, send them a couple of... it's Newcastle, isn't it? So a couple of Carling would do them up there, I think.
So we'll send them 2 pints.
Yeah.
£2.77, you can't argue with that, can you, Tim?
You can't argue with £2.77.
Right, that's gone through. And then look, if we take a picture, and I'll put that on the Facebook, and they'll be able to see that we've sent them a pint. here we go.
This is bad for my reputation.
2 pints.
Binge drinking in Newcastle.
Coming your way. Thanks to
the bank.
Wetherspoons boss. Wetherspoons.
Oh dear, boss. I'm going to get more than one request now, aren't I?
Tim Martin. There we go. Let's hope they don't get into trouble now.
Yeah, exactly.
So you'll be an accessory.
I will be, yeah.
Well, I'm glad that seems to have worked.
Yeah, well, that's a new one on me.
Do you not use the app then?
I did a bit during the lockdowns, but I go to the bar because I talk to the staff and say hello to the staff.
What's your pet hates when you go to the bar?
People holding the glass by the rim.
At the top?
At the top.
Oh, no. And what's the secret? If it's really busy in a Wetherspoons and you want to catch the barman's eye, what's the secret?
There are various techniques that can be used, but politeness is the main thing.
Presumably, if you're the boss, you immediately get served.
Well, I don't. I try not to push in.
Yeah.
In all seriousness,
I know you don't want that. You don't want people to be rude about you like that.
And I also always pay.
That is very important.
Yeah.
Tim Martin, Sir Tim Martin, boss of Wetherspoons. Thanks so much for joining us on Times Radio.
Thanks very much, Matt.
So Tim Martin there, the founder of Wetherspoons. And I did eventually hear back from Matthew and his mate who were drinking in the Newcastle Quayside pub. They sent me the pictures of their pints. They also sent me, basically the table was groaning under drinks, so they got quite a lot. So there we are. Right, if you like what you hear on the podcast or you don't, let me know. You can email me, matt@times.radio, WhatsApp 0333 003 2353, or leave a review wherever you're listening to this. Always nice to hear from you. But for now, from me, Matt Chollets, goodbye.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh no,
yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host
Niñas Bien podcast. We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.